help the environment by using less energy. To learn more, visit greenmountainpower.com or call 888-835-4672. Green Mountain Power, generating possibilities together.
Hi, folks. Todd Mobley here from Formula Ford in Montpelier. Our team at Formula Ford want to help you celebrate the new year and keep you warm with some hot deals. The 2015 redesigned Ford Focus has finally arrived. One of the best-selling cars of all time just keeps getting better. Stop in to see the new design or take advantage of remaining 2014 Focuses in stock with giant New Year's savings. You could take advantage of 0% financing up to a full 72 months to qualified buyers. Or choose to take up to $4,000 off any new 2014 Focus in stock when you finance with Ford. And if leasing is more to your liking, how about leasing a brand new Ford Focus for under $239 a month to qualified buyers with absolutely no money out of your pocket? And the deals don't stop there. You can find incredible New Year's deals on all of our top sellers like Fusion, C-Max, Escapes, Explorers, and of course the mighty F-150 and Super Duty trucks. Formula Ford on the roundabout at the junction of Route 2 and 302 in Montpelier, or visit us from the comfort of your home online 24 hours a day at FormulaFordVT.com.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little chilly out there this morning. Might want to make sure you got your hat, your neck warmer, and everything else on you today. Coming up on the, and leave yourself a little extra time. Want to let the car just give it a break today. Let it warm up just a hair. Coming up on the program today, we're going to be talking about some energy issues. We'll talk about some telecommunication issues. We're going to be, just a moment here, kick off our discussion with the Commissioner of the Department of Public Service. This is the organization that is watching out for you and me when it comes to utility issues. We would love to take your phone calls throughout the program as well, too. You can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Coming up for the rest of the week, coming up on the program tomorrow, we're going to talk with the head of Vermont Gas. Don Rendell will be joining us. We'll talk about the great increase in the cost of the pipeline that they are proposing for the western part of the state. We'll get into that discussion today as well, too. Also, coming up tomorrow afternoon, I'll be back down at the State House. Governor Shumlin will be giving his budget address. A real challenging year with some $90 million or so in terms of a built-in deficit right there to begin with. So that'll be coming your way tomorrow. Friday, I'll be back at the State House in Montpelier. Among the guests that'll be joining us, Governor Shumlin will join us, as he will be doing on Fridays. You can join us throughout the program today at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. Let's give a nice home Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Commissioner of the Department of Public Service. Chris Recchia is joining us here live in our studios. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Mark. My pleasure. Thanks very
nice
much.
Nice day out there, huh?
It's a little chilly.
Yeah.
But beautiful.
The main reason that I asked you to come in, we're going to talk about a wide variety of issues, but I, you know, kept reading all these stories about Fairpoint Communications. Yeah. There's a strike between the company and its workers, and an awful lot of customers out there having difficulty with their service, and when they have difficulty with their service, getting anybody to fix it. What is your department doing about this, and are you doing enough?
Sure. Well, I think this is a very unfortunate situation, and it started before the strike. So I don't want to lay all of this at the doorstep of the strike. But the problem was the service quality for Fairpoint hasn't been good for a while. And we started an investigation and really working with the company to try and improve that in July, long before the strike. And then the strike occurred, and it's only gotten worse. I'll give you an example. In, you know, between July and October, before the strike, we had maybe 70 complaints. They were still serious. You know, there were people not showing up for appointments to install service or to do repairs when they said they were. So, you know, you or I will take a day off, we'll wait for those people, and then
right.
they don't come, and then
Oof.
They don't, you know, they don't call. You know, it's like your mother, you know, they don't call, they don't write, you know. That's not good, and that's not good customer service. So we're already focusing on that. And then since the strike started in October, between October 15th and now, we're now over 1,200 complaints.
Wow.
And we are talking with the company every day. We have check-in calls, and we also meet with them once a week to go over how many complaints and outstanding problems they have and how they're fixing them. And we're prioritizing those people, obviously, who have medical needs or have no cell service, no option, where we're really focusing on trying to get those people corrected within 24 hours of people calling us and letting us know. And I'll certainly want to let people know our consumer affairs number for complaints so we can help them. But it's just not a good situation. And we are also with the Public Service Board. We've started an investigation with Fairpoint where they're going to have to explain why they're having these service quality problems and how to fix them. So there's kind of two things going on. First, we're dealing with case-by-case problems as they come to our attention as quickly as we can. And secondly, we're doing a broader investigation with the Public Service Board into the whole service quality problem.
What effect has kind of amping things up from your department in the past couple of months done, if anything?
Yeah, well, we have restored, we are getting good restoration of people with medical needs, you know, concerns at home, elderly, people who live alone, people who have no cell access or alternatives, and we're getting those restored quickly. So if people are in that situation, I would urge them to call our consumer affairs office. And of course, calling requires, if you don't have a phone, to go to a neighbor or something like that. But it's 1-800-622-4496. And we will try and get them serviced as quickly as possible. Now, the things that we can't help with as much, but we still do relay them to the department, is a lot of people having problems with their DSL service, internet service. That's important to businesses as well, and we're trying to help with those, but we have more limited authority on that than we do on the phone service itself, which is a regulated utility issue.
Wow. You know, I'm listening to this, Chris, and I have a problem. I'm not feeling all that great about my prospects of getting my service back on.
Yeah. I mean,
it sounds like you're pretty powerless.
In terms of internet, we are. Other than really coaxing the company into understanding that if they lose customers and lose that loyalty of customers, as soon as there is an alternative for people, they're going to jump, and that's going to just make the problem worse. So I think the company understands that this is not a viable business model for them to continue. But, you know, there are cases where people have been out for weeks at a time, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's unacceptable.
It is absolutely unacceptable, and that's what we'll be looking at with the Public Service Board.
What was going on back in the summer and early fall prior to the strike? I mean, you can sort of see if you have a strike and that there might be problems associated with that. So what was the problem back then?
The problem back then was, as I mentioned, missed service appointments.
No, but I mean, why was all this happening?
I can't tell you from the intricacies of their business why they were having these problems. I can tell you that when we got complaints about them and we talked with them and got them to get additional, we were trying to get them to get additional crews on, they were having some internal issues with, you'd talk to a service rep who didn't know what was going on in the outside. So they would call a crew out for something that was actually a problem in the office or that needed to be fixed there. So there was a lot of missed opportunities and inefficient use of repair crews and things like that. That just, if you're running a business like this, you would think you would know how to manage those and control for those. And they just weren't doing a good job of it.
Is there anything that you could have done differently? Is there any sort of authority that your department needs?
Look, one of the things, and I don't know if you heard, like a couple of weeks ago, the President of the United States mentioned that he thought the Federal Communications Commission needed to treat internet now like a regulated utility, mm-hmm. and that would be huge. Mm-hmm. The FCC has to decide that, and they're not the speediest in the world either. But if they did that, then we would have additional authority to actually help people with the internet and phone, which is becoming, as you know, the internet's becoming as important to people as their telephone service, and it needs to be better managed.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Chris Recchia. He's the commissioner of the Department of Public Service. You can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We're going to jump around on topics here, but if we move on to another topic, please do not hesitate to give us a call, and we can easily go back and forth here. Let's talk a little bit about Vermont Gas. As you heard me mm-hmm. mention, Chris, we're going to have the president of Vermont Gas on the program tomorrow. The cost increase on this pipeline has been, I would use the word, staggering.
Yep.
They say that phase one is now going to cost up to $154 million. This was began with an estimate of $68 million. So 68 up to $154 million. Mm-hmm. So your department it thinks this makes sense.
Well, we're getting closer to where we have a question about that, but let me go back and say that their first cost estimate increase in July of last year went from $86 million to $121 million, which was pretty significant in and of itself, obviously. Yet the benefits of this project were about $200 million. So we knew that the benefits still far outweighed the costs at that time. And so it was a relatively streamlined process to look at that and say, this is not good. We wanted to understand better why it happened. I'll explain in a second what was going on. But then we still saw that the benefits outweighed the costs, and the board agreed, so that continued. But we also required that they do more thorough cost estimation, and that was the result that they came in with in December, and showed that it was going up to $154 million. And now the benefits and the costs are getting closer to the point where the department feels like we need to look thoroughly at how the costs are derived, how the benefits are calculated, and really vet that well before the board. So we're planning on a pretty thorough investigation of this now. The cost increase has been an estimation problem, not a construction problem. In other words, they underestimated how much labor would cost to do this job, and so when they bid it out, they got results in that were much higher than they thought. So part of the responsibility of a company is to keep track of industry standards and understand their industries, and we feel like they should have done a better job all along that process and not been surprised by that. And that combined with the demand for pipeline services around the country have been increasing, and as a result, the prices have gone up, and that's really the function here. It hasn't been a construction overrun problem. It's just been an estimation problem.
How confident are you that actually stays at $154 million?
Right now, I'm not particularly confident. That's why we need to do a really thorough review of this before the Public Service Board. I feel better about it than I felt earlier about the earlier estimates. They are using a well-known industry standard, one that Velco has used successfully. But I want to look into the details and look under the hood of this and really see what the numbers mean.
You know, I mean, it's one thing if you have like a 10 or 15%, you're off.
Yeah, but, you know, 78%.
I mean, whoever was doing these original numbers is perhaps maybe doing something else for a living, because that's just incredible.
Right. It is incredible. And as I say, they should have been keeping track of the industry and known that the prices were increasing, even when this was pending before the Public Service Board under the original review of the Certificate of Public Good. And we feel like they weren't doing what they should have been doing there. So we recommended a $35,000 penalty, which was the maximum we could, or close to the maximum, $40,000 is the maximum that we could have leveraged on that. The board hasn't decided that yet, But that was a function of feeling like they should have been keeping track better and done a better job. And by the way, the penalties and things are not recoverable in rates by ratepayers. Those are borne by the company.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Any indication they were lowballing this to kind of get it by the regulators?
No, I don't think so. I think that it was... I don't think they were doing that. I think what they were doing was a... I won't say back of the envelope estimate for the costs, but they weren't doing as thorough a job on the cost estimates as they should have been doing. They weren't certainly not paying attention to what bids were coming in the industry across the country. So,
How close is this to where it doesn't financially make sense for your department to back it anymore?
Right. It's close enough now that I think we need to look at it. The benefits, you know, the company, and they'll say this tomorrow, still believe the benefits still outweigh the costs by a considerable margin. But we're going to look at that because we're not sure that that's the case.
So who, is it completely the consumer that picks up these costs? Increases, right. Or does the company take a hit on it,
right,
too?
Not necessarily. That gets evaluated in a rate case that occurs later. None of these costs get incurred by ratepayers unless and until the project is what we call used and useful, meaning it is in existence and it is functioning. So nothing gets passed on to consumers until then. And then, even then, we have to decide what was prudent expenditure, what was reasonable, and what was appropriate for the company to incur. So I think there's a lot more to be decided on that as we do a rate case on this.
Talk to me about this second part of this project that would go to international paper.
Mm-hmm.
How is that in the best interest of Vermont consumers?
Right. So that project is being paid for almost entirely by international paper. There are a couple of gate stations that would serve Cornwall and Shoreham for gas that are obviously part of the regular system. But most of that is being paid for by international paper. It moves us a little closer to Rutland, which is an ultimate goal of trying to get gas to that community. And it also helps pay for part of the phase one work from Burlington to Middlebury. If international paper doesn't occur, then we're probably looking at an additional $25 million cost to the project in phase one, which makes the cost-benefit analysis that much harder to pass. So that's another reason we want to look at this in detail, because if phase two doesn't happen, then the benefits are even, the costs are even higher and closer to the benefits.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like Vermont Gas could be, could almost get pretty deep into this and then have to pull the plug.
It could happen. I would say that pretty deep into it, though, is maybe not occurring because, as I say, these have all been increases in estimates, not construction. They did construct about a 10-mile section in the Colchester area that would have been necessary probably anyway for reliability. So I don't feel like there's a lot of stranded in actual investment yet. But your point is well taken, that we need to get a handle on this and understand, is it a go or no go, are with reliable numbers and reliable understanding of what's going to happen.
244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. We'll take a short break, come back, continue our discussion. Chris Recchi is the Commissioner of the Department of Public Service. We'll be back right after this.
Big mountain terrain, small mountain charm awaits you at Pico Mountain. Centrally located in Killington, Vermont, with 57 trails, 7 lifts, gentle learning terrain, smooth cruisers, and classically narrow New England steeps, even the most selective skiers and riders will be impressed. Buy your lift tickets at PicoMountain.com, and with just a day's planning, you'll save big. Find discounts up to 40% off window rates, unlimited ticket changes, and convenient pickup. Get your gear ready and head to PicoMountain.com.
Need some extra cash after the holidays? Granite Hills Credit Union has a personal loan with a great rate and a one-year term to give you affordable payments. You can use your loan for anything: holiday expenses, travel, bills, anything. Need a bigger loan? We offer some of the best rates available on auto loans, mortgages, Visa cards, and home equity loans. Not a member of Granite Hills? Not a problem. We are open to the community and we want to serve you. Find out how we can help you with those extra expenses that come up during the year. Stop by our Barrie or Montpelier offices, give us a call, or visit our website at granitehills.org.
At Granite Hills Credit Union, the difference is you.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
Maplefields and Irving want you to ski for free. Fill up three times with Irving gasoline at their newest Maplefield store in downtown Newport, just off I-91 in St. Johnsbury, or any other Maplefield Irving locations, and you'll be eligible to receive a buy one, get one free lift pass at great local mountains like Burke, Jay Peak, Smugs, and Bolton Valley. With these new Maplefield locations, a great cup of coffee is never far away when you're on your way for an exciting day at the slopes. Come see them during their grand opening celebration in St. Johnsbury on January 22nd, 23rd, or 24th for awesome specials and prizes.
Whoa, this is your lifeguard, Tank, again. More good news from the Aqua Lair at One Stop Country Pet Supply. I told you there would be fantastic sales on all things aquatic here at the store all month long.
Can I tell them this week's sale item, Tank, please?
Easy, Lenny. Scale it back a bit and go swim over there.
Yeah, Lenny, what Tank said.
So every Friday, we put up new aquatic items on sale for 1 week only. Today through January 15th, you can save on all water treatments, food, nets, and gravel vacuums.
Can I tell them they can get details on our website at onestopcountrypet.com? Can I, please?
You heard the boss. Save on water treatments, food, nets, and gravel vacuums now through the 15th. It's all part of our January aquatics event, so don't swim too far away.
Come see us this month for super savings on all things aquatic. Visit onestopcountrypet.com for details. One Stop Country Pet Supply, Brattleboro, in Barrie, Vermont, and in the center at Colony Mill, Keene, New Hampshire. Open every day.
The January sale is now in progress at Hooker's Furniture in Waterbury Center. This is Bart Newhouse. Save 40% store-wide, featuring Sealy Posturepedic with the Core Support Center for maximum comfort and support. For uncompromising luxury, try the Sealy Cool Gel Memory Foam and the Half Inner Spring Half Memory Foam Hybrid Mattresses. Whatever you do in bed, Sealy supports it with fantastic store-wide savings during the January sale. Only at your bedding experts, Hooker's Furniture in the Ugly Little Red Building on Route 100 in Waterbury Center since 1889.
Matt, continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning with Chris Recchia. He's the commissioner of the Department of Public Service. This is the division in state government that is watching out for you as consumers in utility cases. If you have any questions or comments, golden opportunity for you to join us at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Vermont Yankee closed.
Yep.
What's the latest on that?
Oh, the latest on that was, you know, they stopped operating December 29th, and then they took the fuel out of the reactor and finished that the day before yesterday. And they've notified us and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that they are no longer an operating nuclear power plant. So there is no option to refuel that plant again. And so we're done.
What's the current decommissioning timeline?
It varies. I think the first step that I got to keep focus on is getting the fuel from the spent fuel pool, which is, you know, essentially a big bathtub where the fuel rods, the old fuel rods are covered with water and kept cool. In a few years, those will be movable to dry cask storage on site. That means that you'll be taking, I'd say by 2020, you will move all the fuel from the pool into dry cask. And then it becomes less of an active system that you have to watch and more of a passive one that, granted, we don't really want it on site, but that's the situation right now with no federal place to put the spent fuel. So that's the first step. And then, and some decommissioning can occur before then, but what we're really waiting for is for the decommissioning trust fund to come up in value sufficient so that you can start and finish the decommissioning job. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission won't let you start unless you have enough money to finish it. And so realistically, we're probably talking 10 years to 15 years. I know in a worst case scenario, they're talking in the 2030s to be able to do this. I think it can be done sooner.
Are rates going to go, electric rates going to go way up as some people are predicting because Yankees closed?
No. That's already been factored into the electric rates. And there are some real pressures on rates around New England, mainly because of gas-fired power plants, but not as a result of the nuclear power plant going away. Vermont is somewhat insulated by that because we chose not to deregulate our utilities, and so we actually have long-term contracts that cover through high periods of cost. But what the rest of New England is experiencing is, in particular on days like this when it's below zero and everybody is using gas in southern New England to heat their homes, the electric utilities are unable to get gas at a reasonable price. When they do get gas, it's very expensive, and those rates are skyrocketing for southern New England. They've seen 30 to 100% increase in their electric rates in this past year because of last winter, just the 3 months between January, December and February.
Wow, okay. Yep. I thought there was this huge overabundance.
There's a huge overabundance of natural gas up to the New York.
Okay.
And it does not come across the pipeline capacity in southern New England, is unable to bring in more to southern New England.
Okay. There was a recent decision in New York State to not allow fracking of natural gas.
Right.
Does that have any impact on Vermont?
Not much, because New York had not quite gotten into the fracking thing the way Pennsylvania, let's say, and some of the western states had. But look, all of our domestic oil and gas now, oil too, is result of fracking, this technology of putting a water pressure primarily into the ground to break out the rocks and bring out oil and gas. Vermont banned this a couple of legislative sessions ago.
Yeah.
We have a very small potential for that type of system in the northwest part of the state, but it really isn't economical. But we did ban it because, look, the industry did this to themselves. They have chemicals going into the ground that they won't tell people, or hadn't told people what those were. People got obviously and appropriately upset about not knowing what was going on. The fracking boom occurred with no attention to other environmental factors like discharge of water and things like that, and they should have done a better job of that. Those problems are fixable over time, but they should have never occurred.
244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Back on telecommunications issues, mm-hmm. As you know, your department is supposed to come out with a 10-year telecommunications plan. There's some criticism that there's been no final draft that's been submitted on this.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
We have done a final plan, and I think the criticism was that we had a draft plan that went before a legislative committee, and we did get criticism on that plan, and we revised it considerably and finalized it based on the public comment that we got. What some people, a handful of people are saying is that technically wasn't a final draft that went before the legislature, and we should have brought back another draft before we finalized it. But we feel like we did a good job at holding public meetings, getting public comment, and responding to those public comments. And it's a much stronger plan as a result of those comments we got. But it's done, and it's published, and it's printed, and it's on our website.
What was the change from the one you presented to the legislature to what is today?
Right. The primary thing was the legislature last year did put in a long-range goal of 100 megabytes per second download and upload speed, and recognize that most of us right now are, in a four to one megabytes per second, so much lower. And that was going to cost $1 billion to do, just as an estimate. And so we didn't engage as strongly as we could have in trying to figure out how to do that 100 megabytes per second symmetrical speed rate in our plan, and we got criticized for that. So then the revised plan says, okay, we know we have to get to that point. We do need to get to that point. And in some places, like in Chittenden County, there are places that have that speed. But for the most part, we have a lot of underserved people. You know, we met the governor's commitment of getting 99.8% of the people with some kind of internet capability. But the speeds in a lot of cases are too low for things that people want to do today. So our first priority in the new plan is to get people who have essentially dial-up type capacity up to the 4.1. Now, it's likely that the Federal Communications Commission is going to increase that speed to a 10.1 minimum, and so we've identified that in the plan, too, and we'll try to leapfrog to that as quickly as we can and serve the underserved people first to get them up higher speeds. And then, you know, over the course of the next 20 years, probably shoot for the 100 megabytes per second symmetrical, but it takes money, and we are trying to take what limited funds we have and direct them to the underserved people to get their speeds up.
Why? So what's the, when you say that 99.8% of people have coverage, that sounds different than what the governor was saying. He wanted everybody to have like broadband coverage.
Right.
Not dial-up.
No, that's right. And we do have, the reason I say it's that is that we've got most people do have broadband coverage now, or for that remaining few that we didn't get installed before the end of last year, we have a plan for, which will primarily rely on VTEL to do the wireless broadband system that they're rolling out, and they should have that completed by June of this year. So I do think, and those speeds, VTEL is capable of doing, you know, very, very high speeds, close to the 100 megabytes per second. So that should work.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. Speaking of Chittenden County, speaking of internet, let's talk a little bit about the Burlington Telecom case.
Right.
An agreement was reached with Citibank, which was really holding the paper on this. Some criticism about this deal, that it's now going to move ultimately out of the hands of the public. You comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think we were supportive of this as a way of resolving what is a very unfortunate situation that should not have occurred. You know, Burlington was, and Burlington taxpayers were susceptible to a $33 million bill, and negotiating that down to $10 million and finding a solution for Burlington Telecom, I think really, really helped. And it, I think that we in the department are generally uncomfortable with the private utility type structure being supported by or backed by taxpayers and ratepayers, and we try and avoid those type of situations so that this sort of thing doesn't happen. I think that this resolution of the Burlington Telecom thing was the best of the options that were available, and I know people feel like they may lose that being a community type system, but the risk needs to be borne by the private sector for something like this.
David, put those headphones on. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. Let's head over to Barry. Hi, Pete. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning, Mark?
Good, thanks.
I hope this isn't this question isn't too far off the topic. It has to do with cable costs and satellite. I'm getting some feedback here. Let me go turn the radio down.
Okay.
One moment, I'm on my way here.
Okay. Always a good idea when you call into a talk radio show. Sometimes you'll even be encouraged to do that by the host. We'll say, please turn down your radio.
I could hear it echoing. my question has to do with cable and satellite costs for television. Mm-hmm. It was recently mentioned to me that there's a little advertised Vermont law that says you can force cable companies to reduce your bill because of channels that you don't watch. And that's part A of the question. Part B of the question is, does your guest have any idea if there's any movement afoot to have a la carte choosing of channels? I'll get off and
Before you go here, where did you hear that?
It was just in a conversation with a friend. No authority behind it. It could have been just a wish. I'm not sure.
Right.
I can't give any validity to it.
Okay. All right.
But I'd like to see if it's true.
All right.
Well, Pete, I wish it were, but I will say that in the case of cable, that's one example where the Federal Communication Commission, it's a federal regulated thing, in particular with pricing. We are not able to regulate pricing of or programming of cable. So that is very clearly preempted for Vermont to do that. So.
Any a la carte on the way here?
I've heard of that too. On the just in terms of talk across different businesses, I see. I have Dish TV at home, and I watch the. They keep on putting the commercials on about how you can get different programs for different things. I try not to pay attention to that. I was one of the few that when I started with them and they gave me like 500 channels, I called them. They first month free, take a look at everything. I called them mid month and said, please stop this. Can't do this. I just want my 15 channels that I need. But it is still packaged, and I don't know if from a business standpoint they're gonna now with a lot of internet and downloading of programs, whether they're gonna feel competition from that and then offer people the a la carte thing. I sense that's where it's going, but it's not a regulated thing.
Go back here. What's your big issue with having a public entity run something like the Burlington Telecom?
Yeah, so it's not the fact that I work for government, so I don't think that it's not that I think public entities can't do a good job, but I think it's the risk, it's the downside risk, and when you have a competitive environment like in the Burlington case, you've got three or four different people that can serve internet. You've got cable. You've got fiber stuff. You've got, Fairpoint successful there because there are people there. And you've got Burlington Telecom, and you've got some loyalty associated with Burlington Telecom because it is a community thing, but it is still very expensive and very competitive. And not everybody is going to survive in this world of the competition. And that's what the private sector's for, is to take that risk and decide that they have a business model that can work. Our concern is that if something like that fails, and then there's taxpayer backing of it, or the taxpayers need to be responsive to it, that's fundamentally the issue.
Okay, but here's a problem I see, because competition can also keep everybody honest and keep everybody accountable, right?
Right, that's right.
So if Burlington Telecom can't run itself, isn't the likelihood that it's going to get picked up by Comcast?
Correct.
So how does that help the consumer?
That is essentially the situation that we're in right now. That's as a result of Burlington Telecom not being able to do the job before and ending up with this deficit and the problem that it had with the $17 million of funds that were used to help shore it up. The right answer there is probably that it gets picked up by somebody else, but that's what the concern is. That's probably what's going to happen, and that's where people are saying, we don't want it sold to a Comcast, but that's the situation because there's no other money or funding mechanism to or investors to be able to support it.
But here's the other thing. It was $33 million. I think now everybody knows that the number really is 10.
10, right.
So wouldn't a city like Burlington be wise in terms of an economic development tool? At $10 million, they're spending, I can't remember now what they're going to spend to pick up the Winooski One project, which can revert it back. You probably know.
I don't know that number off the top of my head.
Actually, I think it's like $15 million.
It's something in that ballpark.
So, if we were starting from scratch here, don't you think a community for $10 million bucks to have high-speed fiber.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty good economic development tool.
Sure, if it were $10 million, but it's, I know that the liability was $33 million, and they settled for $10 million with Citibank, but that assumes the $17 million that got moved from the state taxpayer is gone.
Okay, but that, so do you think that $17 million is ever going to come back?
I don't.
So then what difference does it make? I mean, it's not going to come back in a Comcast sale.
Right, okay. Well, if we were starting from scratch and it were $10 million, and this now is reminding me of the Vermont gas conversation, right? Up front, if somebody had said it was $10 million and it really was $10 million, then it would be a good deal. But I don't think it was ever, when it was, you know, the fiber was laid and the and information, you know, the equipment put in, it was $33 million. That's what the stuff cost to put in the ground. So.
Okay. I mean, it just sounds like they're ready to take 10 today and be happy and walk away.
Yes, they are. And that's a good deal. That's why we supported this Mayor Weinberg, you know, effort here to try and resolve this. It is a successful resolution of a difficult and not good situation.
Let's talk about energy policy here. There's been this goal that the state has had to get 90% of its energy by 2050 from renewable sources.
Yep.
Wow, that just sounds like total pipe dreams.
Well, it does sound that way, but we are actually well on our way to doing this. And it is, as we talked about the electric rates and things, we're actually benefiting from this distributed generation in the state. And it is, you may say 90%. Is a pipe dream, but you know, Burlington Electric is 100% renewable right now. Washington Electric is 100% renewable now. Now that's just electricity, and the 90% does cover thermal and transportation, you know, home heating and transportation, and those are tougher nuts to crack. But the governor last week announced an energy innovation program that we're very excited about, because it is beyond a renewable portfolio standard. You know, 32 states in the country have a renewable portfolio standard. Vermont did not. We're kind of leapfrogging beyond that with a program that will provide electric incentives to look at weatherizing homes, if that's the cheapest form of reducing somebody's overall energy demand. That's better than maybe putting the most newer advanced light bulbs in. You know, those right now, the problem has been that we've been focused so much on silos, electricity doing electricity, thermal, you know, weatherization programs doing weatherization, and transportation, of course, has been really hard. And we're trying to figure out ways of getting the three to be more integrated, so that a green
change your light bulb while you're driving a car.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'll try not to do both, because they'll put a law on, you know, like texting. You can't do that. But I think that, you know, an example of this is Green Mountain Power doing electric charging stations for electric vehicles to help us develop that capacity and infrastructure, so people feel comfortable investing in an electric car. That helps. You know, it might increase your amount of electricity you're using, but a lot of our electricity is renewable, and a higher percentage of that avoids fossil fuels and probably reduces your costs overall. Similarly, you know, the best thing people can do is weatherize their homes. We spend about $500 million a year in Vermont on heating oil that is simply you know, going out of the state and in many cases out of the country in terms of the economy. And I think that we are in a position where we're able to get people, if we have programs and incentives for people to weatherize their houses and insulate them, they are more comfortable, they save energy, and over time, it's one of the quickest paybacks for people in terms of reducing their energy demand. So, you know, 90% is tough. It is a goal that we have because Vermont, frankly, has these resources. We have biomass, we have hydro, we have wind, and we have solar. We don't have oil, we don't have gas. If we want to be energy secure and independent, this is the direction we need to go in.
There's some folks who are suggesting, proposing a carbon tax. Didn't sound like, from the people that I talked to last Friday, it's going to go anywhere.
Right.
But one of the things that they talked about, Chris, was that this could really fuel a whole weatherization program.
Yep. It is an option that we looked at. The department completed a total energy study last month, and a carbon type tax system was one of the scenarios that was run. Mm-hmm. And what we found was it actually, it can help provide those funds and it does make improvements, but it tends to also drive people from oil to natural gas as opposed to from oil to a renewable. So you really need more of a policy that's focusing on renewables than the carbon, than just an economic engine that the carbon taxes would give you. The carbon tax tends to move you to the cheapest form of fuel that's readily available, mm-hmm. and not necessarily to a renewable policy.
Mm-hmm. Let me even put those on. What do you think about a sugar sweetened beverage tax? Yeah. Just kidding. That was yesterday. All right, let's go to Plainfield. Bram, how you doing this morning?
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Mark, Chris.
Hi, Bram.
I am a selectman in Plainfield, Vermont, and I want to relate to you a story. We have budget meetings this time of year, and the Conservation Commission came in, and the woman said, by the way, you can't reach me. I don't have a phone. I haven't had a phone for about eight or nine days, and I'm very scared because my husband has a heart condition, and there's no landline. This was, back when we had some weather. And I said, "Well, the fire chief is coming in next, and I'll talk to him about emergency contingency." So I said to the fire chief, who lives on the other side of town, "I said, listen, Pat, do you have any other residents who've had long-time landline phone outages? Because this sounds like a very dangerous situation." And he said, "Me, I've been out with. I don't have my landline either."
The fire chief.
The fire chief.
Okay.
The fire chief. Now. The Public Service Board has let Fairpoint run roughshod over the state for a number of years now. And I really am very concerned that there is a lack of understanding of how dangerous this situation is. And I find it, it's not for lack of trying. I'm sure that the Public Service Department has been on the phone numerous times with Fairpoint, and I know that there have been outage issues. But the bottom line here is this company feels perfectly at home to create situations like the one I just mentioned. And note that Plainfield was not hit particularly hard with the weather. It's simply a lack of will on the part of regulators to rein in this monster, as far as I'm concerned. And I would like to to hear what's being done to get these guys under control.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Hang on the line here.
So, Bram, thanks very much. And your story, unfortunately, is not unique. And we've been feeling this is an absolute unacceptable situation. And we're not only on the phone with Fairpoint regularly, but we're on it every day with them, getting numbers from them and telling them what we think they need to do next. And for the type of situation like you have, medical emergency or medical, exposed people that have no other option, we're getting those turned around now within 24 hours. So we are doing a lot more. I agree with you that, the company's service quality is just awful and has been awful. And I can't make a business want to do the right thing, but I can regulate them to the extent that they have to do what is minimally necessary, and we're bringing them before the Public Service Board to get that to happen.
Well, just another note that I'll tell you, the fire chief,
yeah,
when I talked to him about this situation, the line repairman who was, there was some strike situation, so the line repairman had a conversation with him and said, the line repairman works regularly in Central America. And he said he'd never seen worse line infrastructure. And he told the fire chief, look, this is just a temporary patch, and you're going to have this problem going forward. Let me just say, I think that you, in terms of the toolkit that you have presently, are doing the best you can do. But my feeling is that you need to look outside the regular regulatory framework and consider other options. Now, I will take you at your word that that if there's a medical emergency situation, it'll only take 24 hours. And if I get a call from a resident, believe me, I'll try to contact you to make sure that you know that that's not happening.
Exactly.
What I would like you to consider is that, and unfortunately, I think the congressional delegation has fallen into the trap of thinking this has something to do with a labor issue. It really, the state should set a standard and let the chief executive at Fairpoint figure out how to, you know, what pay packages are. And my feeling is that if the state was more aggressive, then there would be less, there probably wouldn't be a strike if they were nervous about draconian fines. Now, in this particular instance, in terms of public safety, I honestly think, and I know that you're going to think this is, you know, out of the box and kind of stupid, but I really want you to consider this. If there is an instance where, like, for example, this woman went, I think, almost 15 days worrying about her husband, and I had to, you know, hear those scary situations. If that kind of situation occurs, if there is a death from that situation, I want you to communicate to the Attorney General, and I think the Attorney General ought to be on the phone with the CEO of Fairpoint and just say, look, if there is some kind of a problem here where Vermonters, after 8 days of inaction, somebody loses a life, then we're going to consider criminal prosecution. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you probably think that's absurd, but it's really more a tool to get them to really focus on infrastructure and so forth.
So I don't think that's absurd. I am not saying that that's necessarily the direction, but I consider it just a matter of luck that we have not had a serious problem in this area. And I find it totally unacceptable. And, you know, the standard service quality standard that, you know, that they have and that they were supposed to be meeting the whole time that they have been in business here in Vermont is restoring service within 24 hours. That is the standard. They have never met that standard. That is why we initiated getting them before the board in July and told them this was unacceptable. And this is before the strike, and it's before storms. And I agree with your concern and characterization of this. This needs to be fixed.
Let's go to Waitsfield. Michael, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Beautiful sunny morning. No time to go skiing today, but it would be a perfect day. But anyway, I don't understand you said something about because of the cold weather that the demand on natural gas, it doesn't seem right now to be affecting the price. The price of gas is way down. I was kind of anticipating that we were going to get a reduction in electrical rates because some of our electricity is generated by natural gas. I know for a fact that last year at this date, propane was $1.92 wholesale, and now it's 70 cents. So now I think that natural gas must be in the same boat. And okay. I know that the electric companies have long-term contracts and stuff like that, but I don't think we have any worry about the price of electricity going up. I actually think that we should be looking for the price of electricity to go down.
Okay. Thank you for your call.
Well, Michael, just clarification, for Vermont, that's true. Our gas comes from Canada, and we don't have any gas-fired power plants, so our electricity is, and our prices are going down. We had a roughly 2.5% decrease from, for Green Mountain Power Utilities, you know, service customers, which is, you know, great. At the same time, that southern New England is where the problem is. They have seen 100% increase in retail prices, and it's because of the months of December, January, and February when their gas-fired power plants are unable to get gas. And this is a function of those power plants being deregulated and not choosing, frankly, to enter into contracts with gas suppliers to say, you know, when I need it, you have to provide it. Instead, they buy it on the market at that day. And if it's really cold in southern New England and people are heating a lot more with gas down there, they're unable to get gas at a reasonable price, and that's reflected in the price of electricity if they can get gas at all. And that's why the southern New England states and the deregulated states have seen such an increase in the cost of their electricity, while we are benefiting from our long-term contracts.
Covered a little ground here this morning.
We certainly did.
Well,
thanks.
Broaden your skill set here beyond environmental issues here, too, as well.
Exactly.
Thank you for your time this morning. We'll have to get you back soon.
It was a pleasure.
And please bring that bag of Vermont Coffee Company coffee with you on your way out the door.
Very happy to. Thanks so much, guys.
That's going to wrap things up for hour number one. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll take your calls the rest of the way. A couple of interesting items that we can bandy about. We'll begin hour number two with our White House crew. That, of course, will begin right after we check the latest news. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush in AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. As Al-Qaeda